You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another night slowly closes in, and I feel so lonely. Touching heat freezing on my skin. I pretend you.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
I tried to remove some of the douche from my voice.
Yeah, but then you remove the energy from the hardcore podcast. You have to be reminded every once in a while.
You guys want to run it back? Let's run it back. Keep this all in. Let's run it back.
Have you seen the goddamn Mrs. Doubtfire, Mork and Mindy?
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Fucking God.
Have you seen Robin Williams do that when he messes up a joke?
And he just pulls it back. Does the
He does a rewind, but he does it pretty effectively.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Bob, you know, Bob, I feel bad because Pat's really been working hard at the mill.
No,
and doesn't have the energy.
His brain capacity is just getting effed up with all the steel grindings in his skin.
Yeah, it's all the iron ore. Welcome to Axe to Grind, and now here's where I'm going to mix it up: the hardcore podcast.
The hardcore podcast.
No, I wanted to punch podcast. Oh, you understand?
All right, let's go. Do it again.
Welcome to Axe to Grind. The hardcore. No, we're going to. The hardcore podcast.
Dude, you're in Albany. I can get there in like 3 hours.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
Tom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, change up. Guys, thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Death Wish Inc. Thank you to Closed Casket Activities. Thank you to Run for Cover. Thank you to. To Live a Lie. Today we're focusing on To Live a Lie and Run for Cover. Guys, I'm up in the random merch bonanza. First, you guys get to pick. Am I going to Run for Cover or am I going to Live a Lie?
I'm going to say To Live a Lie.
Okay. So we're going to livealie.com. Click on that web store. Additionally, I am selecting from their merch apparel section. They have
shirts. Sure to pull that up, Bob.
No, I'll just do it random. You guys are basically picking my numbers for me, which is fun. I'm going to shirts. There's 47 shirts.
Wow.
So there's 47 products, which they also do it by size, so it's not totally the same. But I like this because it'll be funny because it'll also add in a size element. Patrick picked the store. Tom, what number between 1 and 47?
45.
All right. I will be purchasing an 47, 46, 45. Ooh, it's in my size. I am wearing the To Live a Lie Knuckles shirt in red. So this is the is this a toy machine? Is it the Knuckles To Live a Lie?
All right.
Okay, sure. So
classic,
that
classic skate shirt.
Yes, classic skate shirt. In my size too. Like I was really hoping. I was one away from getting the X Brainiacs X Hail Fastcore shirt in triple X. Each of you, I would like you to think of one scenario where I would wear this red To Live a Lie Knuckles shirt, and I'll pick which I prefer. So, who's got one for me first?
When me and Morgado come down and we go to the pizza place in Neptune that if you eat a full pie, you get a t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. God, why am I? We're all broken by the mill.
It's like Fanny and something or
no.
Oh my God, this is embarrassing.
Holy shit, my brain's Pete and Elda's.
Pete and Elda.
Okay, Pete and Elda. Okay, that feels pretty good. That's pretty good. Patrick, what's my scenario?
Okay, a relative that you've never met passes away, and their butler comes to you and serves you papers saying that you're entitled to $25 million if you can just be a park ranger for a year wearing the same clothes operate in a fire watch tower with no contact with the rest of the world.
Oh my God, this sounds so cool. Holy shit. Tom, I was really expecting I was going to get pizza with you and Morgado.
Oh, we're going to make that happen. I told him that.
Yeah, let's make it work. I think he should be able to eat a whole Pete and Eldest pizza, right?
He definitely could.
I think he can.
I feel like all three of us could.
Oh, I mean,
It's
pizza crackers. Yeah, I did it last time. I do it anytime I'm there. I'm going to the park ranger by myself for a whole year because 25 million would just make life so easy.
Now, Bob, do you think your family would understand?
It's just a year?
I mean, a year is a long time. You got no contact with your family for a year. You do walk with the 25 mil, though.
I mean, they can come visit.
Just he can mail them a letter once every week.
I mean, they would say, you know, they want me for all time, but they need that 25 mil more than they want me.
I'd be legitimately mad at them if they were like, no, don't take the 25 mil.
No. I mean, that'll send them both to college.
I am literally fucking like ollieing over something in this shirt to get to that 25 million. So
over the fire.
Yeah. To livealie.com, please order a cool shirt. Enjoy the random game. I threw your names in the randomizer, random.org, our new sponsor. And Tom, you're up. So we are going to runforcoverrecords.com. We are in their store. We are going to their categories. We are going to, apparel, shirts, outerwear, hats. Do you want to do all apparel or do you want to go to shirts, outerwear, or hats?
Let's go all apparel. Make it. I was going to go hats, a broad choice. Like that might be too limited.
Okay. So hold on. Six.
Because, I mean, you're a beach guy. You can use a hat for the beach.
I know. I'm with the hats. Like I don't.
Let's go hats.
Okay, you want to do hats? Let's do hats. All right. It's summertime. Hats are good to keep things out of your head, your face, keep the sun off. Good. This is actually perfect. There's 18 choices basically.
Wow.
So pick a number between 1 and 18.
13.
13. Okay. 6. 12. Oh, okay. Tom, you have a teen suicide rain beanie that you are going to be wearing and purchasing. It's a black beanie with a 2-color, 2.5 by 2 inch patch. These are very nice beanies. I've seen them, may have helped make them at one point. Patrick and I are going to come up with separate situations where you would wear the teen suicide beanie and you are going to have to pick which
with
one.
With my Jarhead fertilizer t-shirt. I'm going to have
long sleeve. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you're looking cool.
All right, Patrick, go first.
Okay, your life falls apart. You're struggling to put it back together. You decide that you really don't want to oversee anybody because there's a lot of stress to that. You're sort of sick of any managerial aspect to your life. You got a friend who's a teamster who says it's not too late in life. He can get you in. You are now Teamster Tom. Do you wear it to your Teamster gig?
Or, Tom, you have, through a weird twist of fate, found yourself in Staten Island right by the where the ferries come in and out, right?
Already pretty weird, yeah.
I'm neglecting to see the difference so far.
Right, I know. A man approaches you with an outfit similar to, who's the buddy? The hello, fellow young people.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. He's got that outfit, but you have a teen suicide beanie as part of the outfit. It says, I have a suitcase here with $25 million in cash. There's a small rowboat over there. I need you to put this outfit on with the teen suicide beanie and using that rowboat, get these 12 teens to Manhattan. You get the $25 million.
Like Tom suicide. You know what I'm saying?
which option are you doing? Rowboat Tom or Teamster Tom? Yep.
Fuck. Will the teens have phones to play with and they're there before keep their mouth shut?
They do. You also have the option of enlisting their services.
Ooh.
Putting them to work, you know what I mean?
I might go Teamster and bury somebody.
All right. You're skipping the 25 mil.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? You make a good point.
Patrick unbalanced the options last time with 25 million. If it was just you can be a park ranger for a year and not see anybody, or, you know.
Listening. Yeah. If I got to get him from, you know, it's really not that far from Staten Island to the, like, the tip of lower Manhattan. I'll go for it. 25 million. Teen suicide.
Hit runforcoverrecords.com. Get yourself a beanie. Get yourself a dad hat. Get yourself, I don't know, like a floppy goof hat. Who knows? Whatever. Thank you to our sponsors. Guys, what's popping? What's good? What's going on?
Everything in life is good. I'm preparing to go across the country by train again in 2 days. Everybody wish me luck.
Sure, your life is good?
Didn't you do that weeks ago?
Yeah. Listen.
I thought you did that weeks ago.
Did it weeks ago, but I'm just replaying
doing it again. You're a fucking rail baron. We got it.
Replaying it in my mind. No. So here's the deal. There is a going across the country. You can be inspired by this young couple from England who made a very extensive YouTube channel out of.
We talked about this on episode that came out over a month ago.
No. Different couple.
Different couple. Okay.
I watched that. Continue. Kind of like a dorky, like, I went and had a beer where Kerouac drank.
Yeah. This is like, they look like one kid's head is so much bigger than his body. They look adorable.
Glasses. He looks like both look like cartoons of what you would think.
Yes. Harry Potter ass, sort of like, and they are just so excited. They keep playing Come to America song, and it's adorable how excited they are to see Salt Lake City.
Yes, they took the train across, and they took the California Zephyr, and they used the Ben Gibbard song.
Yes,
I did.
Wow, Tom, how did you end up on that fucking?
Right, because
YouTube?
I don't fucking go anywhere,
right?
Because pandemic. Travel so I watch YouTube like. Hey, here's me and my buddy walking through the Grand Canyon, and I just watch that, and that's how I travel.
I like it. I like it. I'm with it. Guys, life's magical tapestry. Life's rich tapestry.
Wow.
The internet's so wild. We all follow weird stuff. I have a friend, and I want to ask you, what are your best – we've done this a few times. What are your best, like, niche follows? A friend of mine loosely fell into trucking of 10 years ago, something like that. And he doesn't post a lot, but he occasionally posts these things that are very like, oh, this is like trucker humor. Oh, and so okay. I got pulled in, and trucker Instagram is fucking awesome. It's fucking great. Lit scene.
I've got people that have really extreme political views. Like,
tell us more.
Just people who kind of they're just ramping it up every single day of their life. Like, okay, so there's this one person I follow who used to have a completely normal Instagram account where sometimes they would have a text box of like a thing that they care about, but it would largely be, you know, meals, their selfies of themselves, dog, their life. And in the last maybe like 5 months, they post several times a day, nothing personal at all political, all text boxes. And it's starting to look like maybe this past year has, it didn't like necessarily, like for many people, it woke them up to things that they should be paying attention to. For other people, it may have made them fixated in a way that would require psychiatric appraisal. And that's sort of what this person is aiming. That's where this person's going, it seems. And I don't know them well enough to be like, hey, I noticed that there appears to be literally no joy in your life at all. Are you okay? Does anybody talk to you? But I don't know them. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
No names, but a friend of a friend's, whatever, reached out to somebody who's essentially a stranger to say, hey, you seem pretty fucked up. Are you all right? And it worked out. The other person was like, yeah, you know what? I am fucked up. But like,
oh, that's good.
But to me, that's like a big, you're throwing a Hail Mary pass that somebody doesn't say, you know what? Mind your goddamn business, motherfucker. Who are you? So shout out to people that can be that nosy, but I'm just watching this person.
Nosy.
I'm watching this person deteriorate in front of my eyes. I don't know what to do about people that like, because what do you do? Obviously, if this person cares so much about these political issues and I say, hey, you seem like desperately unhappy. Is everything cool? They're just going to go, yeah, man, I really care about this issue. Fuck off. But if you were stuck in that moment where you can't parse the larger world from your own happiness, like you can, like those two things are so tied, then nothing I say is going to make any sense to you.
Okay, Tom, what is your good internet follow?
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Does it surprise you at all that Patrick has friends with extremist political follows with extremist political views?
Not at all.
No, right.
Yeah. And here's what I'm going to say, what I follow.
Yes.
I follow an Instagram account that is solely fat animals.
I like that.
Really?
That are just like, check out this chunk. It's like fucking like dogs that like can't walk. I follow that. I follow several Pomeranian accounts because I love it. And then I also follow it was kind of I think Brendan Sandieri put me onto this little guy. So someone kept getting like their like all their food in their garden eaten. So they set up like a camera and now they catch this like fat fucking like a chipmunk. Whatever, coming and eating, but it's like literally framed so perfectly. So like this motherfucker is going to going ham on like a carrot, but like
in the camera.
Right. Yes, it's fucking incredible.
It's really good. I've seen that. That's
it's called like bad. Frank the fucking beef, whatever the fuck it is. But I highly recommend that.
I love it. Yo, shout out. My current favorite meme is any of the shrimp fried rice jokes. The like. No way, a fucking shrimp fried this rice.
Yes.
And then the one, the evolution being someone photoshopping a giant shrimp at a hibachi making fried rice. And then no fucking way. I love it. Guys, yo, we're here to talk hardcore today in a special way, something that I think all three of us actually really love this exercise. We haven't done it for a minute. Sometimes it's hard to pin it down, but I think we're going to try to do a few more of these because this was a super fun exercise, at least for me. I would love to hear from you guys. Today, Tom, we're doing a deep dive on
the Hope Conspiracy.
Boom, boom. Yo, am I right in saying that we all like this, Patrick?
Yeah, but Bob, your response to this is like real wild to me because I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I think Tom and I both like this band more than you do, but you had a better time. You like really like enjoyed the shit out of this exercise this time. You were like buzzing.
No, I mean, you know what? It's because it's mostly the exercise is super fun, and I we'll see about who. Yeah, I mean, we should do the preconceived where we're at with this band in whole. But I like the activity of it. It's fun, and the Hope Conspiracy, to be very like transparent, has what I think in this moment is the perfect density of material.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, and for transparency, I started, you know, Cold Blue, Philo 3, all the way through True Nihilist. I didn't do the demo, so pardon me on that. But you know, there's a good amount of material, but at no point did it slog. So that's you know, a spoiler alert, but it just felt like a really healthy amount of material where you could see things changing, you could kind of listen to it. So it was kind of a fun version of this exercise, whereas there's bands that all three of us like that I'll name, Agnostic Front, doing a deep dive where we actually listen to their whole catalog. There's a little bit of that that's not fun
because it's so much.
There's so much.
It's super dense.
Super dense. And you know, like bands who maybe, and there's a couple, like I'll say for me, there's a couple Agnostic Front records that are not top shelf material. Somebody might love them. It's just not me. There might be bands I like a lot who have a ton of material, but that I don't want to digest in this way. But I actually found the Hope Conspiracy digestibility to be very high. So before we get in, Patrick, well, Tom, why don't you start us? What is your familiarity with the Hope Conspiracy before this activity?
I'm incredibly familiar with them, toured the U.S. with them, with Most Precious Blood, sang backups on the Endnote record. I've known some of the dudes since their former bands, like Harvest. We can go in on our thoughts about the record.
Yeah, I've known them for very familiar. Yeah.
Very, very, very familiar. Yeah.
Patrick.
I remember when they were popping, a lot of energy around them. You got to remember that this was a time in my life where I was just looking for reasons to write bands off. So
yep.
I think I probably thought that they were too handsome.
I was going to say that. It's like a joke, and I didn't know you were actually going
to
say that.
Yeah, no, I actually used to find reasons to hate on bands.
This is offensive. They're too old, too good-looking.
Yeah, it was a good-looking selection of men.
I think it might have hurt them to be – yeah.
No doubt. Yo, no doubt. So at any rate
– Pat, did I ever tell you that story about that? So sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Speaking about prettiness – MPB does a weekend. It's MPB, Death by Stereo, Hope Conspiracy, Sick of It All, right? Mm. DC and Philly at the Troc. And this is like early 2000s. So like they're still relatively new, you know? And, you know, we're watching them play or whatever. And our buddy Lou, our mutual friend Lou Tang, turns to me and he goes, "I'm pretty sure this is the best looking band I've ever seen in my entire life," like mid set. And I was like, "I think you're right."
Yeah, and look, for every door that opens, in subculture world, it also closes one or two. So certainly you had like little bitter goblins like myself that would be like, "Look at these fucking guys," you know? And maybe some of the like punkier crowd just wrote them off out of nowhere. And it was also not for nothing. Boston was really keen on handsome men. Like it was like churning out handsome men. And some of us were getting sick of it.
But I feel like, don't you think that like, you know, like obviously very good looking dude. And I'm sorry that this is like so disrespectful that we're like, the Muse is cool, but have you seen them in a pair of Diesel jeans? Like, because I feel like.
I didn't expect you guys to go this way this quickly is all.
No, Pat did. And then I was like, well, while we're here. But I think Kevin Baker, obviously a good looking dude, but was also a tough dude.
Yeah.
So that kind of like, I think that sort of ameliorated any kind of like, I don't like them because they're all too pretty. Fucking Adam Patterson was built like the Incredible Hulk, and fucking Kevin Baker was a badass too. So like, it's like, I think if they were all like 150-pound handsome kids, it'd be a different story.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, certainly, and there was, there's rumors about them being willing to fight. They were not, yeah, it wasn't like strictly speaking, like when Long Island got really into metalcore and like handsome
fashion core shirts and stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't like that at all. But you know, like it was still. If you're bitter and I am, then there's always a reason to hate. But Cold Blue, I was familiar with when it came out. I was even familiar with Kevin was in Piecemeal, right?
Correct.
Okay, right. So I was familiar with Piecemeal before this. Mm-hmm. And then Cold Blue was good. I really liked it. And then I kind of just didn't pay attention for a number of years, even though I saw them. You know what I mean? Like, even though I was like, oh, yeah. But I just was not interested in new music from them for whatever reason. You know, I don't know what that would be. Revisited it all the material, maybe 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and was really fucking impressed. So that's where I stand now going into another re-listen.
True.
How are you, Bob?
Was there, was familiar, especially in the live setting. Saw him a grip of times. Was kind of, it's odd. It's odd where they were in placement. And it's one of the things that I'm hoping we talk about a little bit in this, like almost debunking things. I remember hearing Cold Blue. I think I did a listening station on that at Generation.
I love that.
and was like, oh, this is pretty dope. This is cool. But it was also like not what I totally expected. And I was certainly into faster stuff at that point. And here's the thing. It's not like that record's not fast. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like a fast hardcore punk record or anything, but like it's not some slow or mid-tempo record necessarily either. So I was familiar with the band. I was not what I would call a fan at the time. And likely for mostly aesthetic reasons, but I always was kind of like, yeah, but that Cold Blue record's kind of cool in a weird way. I don't know, you know. And I don't know if I ever even owned it, but I remember always kind of feeling warmly when I would hear it and was like, oh, it's like pretty good. Sounds good. Everything's good. But then didn't really check out material beyond that. And I mean, you know, saw them any number of times between 2000 and 2004, you know what I mean? So yeah, you know, especially earlier on, I just remember seeing them in New Jersey. They played tons of different tours, like, and they played with all different types of bands, you know, across the hardcore spectrum. So, yeah, no, so heard Cold Blue, didn't own it, but thought it was kind of cool and never owned any of their other records and had vague, potentially not much awareness of Death Knows Your Name. You know, remember it coming out and being like, this is a giant record, because I just remember seeing posters for it. The imagery was always big, but never really gave it a true listen till now. So, yeah, I'm stoked to fucking talk about this stuff with you guys. I think we should just kind of walk through this, but I wanted to ask you guys first, before we dive into it, are there any misconceptions about this band or the sound that we can work on debunking as we get through this episode?
Yes, I think there is.
Okay.
I think there's, to me, there's like two HopeCon camps.
Mm-hmm.
That I think there's like, you know, people that are pushing for the reunion because they want Cold Blue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's just as many, if not more, people that would be bummed if they didn't hear the Death Knows Your Name stuff. Right?
Yep.
And like, if you listen to them all kind of, which I mean, I was familiar with all the records already, but kind of listening to them all together.
Yep.
There's not that much of a difference.
Yep.
I always thought, like, in my head, it was like, yep. Well, like, you know, the Death Knows Your Name stuff is a little more like kind of sludgier and like
more rock.
No, more rock.
That was in my head. No, it's
just
not.
Less it's moshy. Not. It's less overtly correct. Chug.
Correct.
Yeah. Listen, they just sound slightly tighter, and I don't mean. I mean, what I mean by this is, they sound very squarely like a pure post '90s hardcore band on the Cold Blue.
Yes.
And then
very unbroken.
Yes. And then by the final record, they sound like that, but honed to the sharpest possible point. So I agree with both of you that this is the same band throughout, but the production changes quite a bit.
Yeah. And I think there's production change. I think there are a couple other little subtle changes as you go through that we can discuss, but that's one of the, Tom, I wrote down basically the same thing. I said there was a misconception that this band went full bouncer rock. You know what I mean?
Stoner metal, and it's
never
not.
Did. Never did.
Not at all. Never did. Now, if someone wanted to make that argument, they shouldn't be pointing to Death Knows Your Name. They should be pointing to the 2009 EP, True Nihilist, and they'd still be wrong, but they'd at least have like an argument to be made. But it's still not bouncer rock. No. You know what I mean? Like, this is still, it still has teeth in it.
The closest they ever come to bouncer rock is their most listened to song by a wide margin. And it is still a million miles from bouncer rock. It's like a driving, like, it's a rock and hardcore song, no doubt, but it is not rock.
Well, and that's one of the sonic changes that I think happens between Endnote and Death Knows Your Name that we can talk about. But between Death Knows Your Name and True Nihilist, there's a couple other little tweaks that I think you go, oh, okay, I see some Motorhead here. okay, but it's never tasteless in that way that Tom and Patrick, I mean, I think all three of us get almost automatic douche chills to the idea of like, hey, I'm rocking that. Okay. Okay, check out my beard. Yeah. Like, fuck.
You know what? We say that, but I've been listening to that Down record all week.
Yeah, but that's...
That first one?
Yeah, the NOLA record, yeah.
Yeah, but that record's really all right. Yeah, no, that's a good... I'm thinking of the... You know what, but here's...
fucking scum moments on that, though.
Bear, I mean, smoke, bro.
With the band that no one can... no one could escape in the early Armageddon...
Entombed.
Not Entombed. No,
Armageddon Blues? Oh, no.
Fuck. Rockers, Scandinavian...
Oh, Turbo Negro.
There we go. There's good Turbo Negro records, but it's very much like, yo, what they inspired in the punk and hardcore world, where everybody all of a sudden was cocksure and ready to ring out riffs.
Nightmare
Blues is a Power Trip song. What am I?
No, it's sorry. Okay. It's a no. I think it's Wolverine Blues.
And, sorry,
exactly. I think it's Apocalypse Dudes. That's why it was not Armageddon. All right. As we all go fucking senile while recording. Jesus. All right. So I think, Tom, we can squarely debunk. Hope Conspiracy never went full rocker.
Okay. Here's another unfounded rumor.
Yes.
Metalcore.
That's my other one. My other note was... This is a big M metalcore band. No, untrue.
Yeah, not at all. It's. I used to think everybody accused them of being just 108, right? I don't think that's true. This is those first records are very much Unbroken, and you can say Unbroken and 108 have things in common.
Yep.
But like, it's much more Unbroken than it is 108. There is 108 in that DNA, no doubt.
Oh, sure.
But you can't accuse this band of being any type of rip.
Yo, I have to ask you guys this because there's discrepancy here and discrepancy from my memory. In my head, File 03 came out before Cold Blue. Am I wrong about that?
That is wrong.
Okay. I don't know why that is.
That came out right after.
Right after. Okay. So there was sequentially. Okay. In my head, and I would like to hear from someone who knows, I wouldn't be surprised if File 03 was recorded before Cold Blue. I could be wrong.
That's got the demo on it.
Oh, so there we go. So I did hear the demo.
Super correct. Yeah. So there's two new songs. So this is a Naked Ray Gun cover.
Yep.
And No Love Goes Unpunished. Those are the two newer songs on there.
Yes.
And then they addended the
demo.
The demo. Yeah.
Okay. So this is my biggest. Okay. Then it all fits. Hope Conspiracy, not metalcore. They actually usher in with Cold Blue and File 03, the new songs, not the demo, the death of the 90s sound. And I think it's something that we should attribute to the Boston bands of note of the time, American Nightmare, Hope Con, a little later Suicide File. But like, it's something I never totally pieced together was those bands deaded the 90s sound. If you hear the Hope Conspiracy demo as it is on File 03, now I can say that because I listen to a bunch, those songs still have a little bit of 90s in it.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? I think Divinity Sickness and Regret Kills, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of like 90s in here. There's a little bit of like discordance in the guitar playing that I'm like, I'm not sure that this feels even. And then I'm listening to like a song like No Love Goes Unpunished. I'm like, this feels uneven. Now it makes total sense. With what these bands did, and they're not the only ones, but they kind of said, okay, yep, that was the 90s sound. That's not polishing a diamond. That's going from coal to a diamond, in my opinion, sonically. It's changing the substance into something different.
Yeah, I would actually say that happens after Cold Blue. I agree with you. And I actually really like the demo. But I think Cold Blue it stood out for a reason.
Cold Blue has elements of that. I think I think like Bled Across the Wire has some real 90s in there.
I mean, look, part of the reason that it appeals to me so much off the bat is some of the 90s vocal affectations that,
that disappear by Endnote.
Yes, 100%. And part of that is that they became a more professional sounding band. Because his vocals on the demo and Cold Blue are, I mean, listen, by that last LP, he is a fucking machine. And he's not a machine on those early songs. He is a...
he's a hardcore singer.
Yeah, he's a hardcore singer.
And above average, but you're hearing things on the demo. The demo makes sense now because it's like, okay, they're still finding the sound on those demo tracks. Cold Blue, they've got it figured out a lot more, but there's a couple conventions that he does vocally. Music-wise, there's a couple parts that are like, oh, okay, this is more like a more 90s format. I think Youth and Its Burden, cool song for sure.
Cool song.
But then you hit into Divinity Sickness, and I feel like that one's a little... That's one of the songs I like less. Well, which some people might be like, yo, I love it. But that just sonically, I'm like, oh, okay, this is doing stuff that I'm not particularly into. And if you guys, really quick, I was doing a lot of work on when I'm listening to this going, yo, I actually think this record is cool. Like, I think it's not just good, but cool. Why was I out on this band? So that was an exercise I was working on that we'll touch through as we go on in this.
Well, let's talk about something that always works in hardcore, which is lead off line unaccompanied. Always works. So a great example is the Turmoil song that opens with What the Fuck.
Yeah.
Everybody on earth, even if you don't like metalcore, has a warmth for that song. I could play that for the crustiest dude in North America and he'd go, yeah, well, that part's pretty sick, you know? And HopeCon never goes to that type of metalcore like tech or brutal or whatever. But on Cold Blue, at least two songs open with an unaccompanied line is so gripping that you're in from jump. And it is a very cool effect that a lot of people are not comfortable doing or don't have the vision to do. And they make it work right out the gate.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein, Plus, or, are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code AXETOGRIND50, that's numeral 50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXETOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXETOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to start off Cold Blue. I think the records, there's metallic influence, but I wouldn't consider this record particularly metallic.
No.
Like, Tom, like, especially being like straight up a peer band, essentially. Like,
yeah,
you know, like they, there's two things that really struck me here. They're super competent. They're playing a form of hardcore that doesn't feel particularly dated. Like, it's not like tied to some like very clear 80s things. I think there's a lot of Unbroken in the DNA.
Sure.
But it feels a little different in this format. And it's not, yo, it's not even as metal as some of the Unbroken tracks. Am I off on that?
No, this is Circa 77. This is Absentee Debate.
Okay.
Yep. Becoming a band. And I think, I mean, Pat and I talked about it too. Like, I think we both, as a peer band, like, we both kind of occupied the same space.
Yeah.
To a point. It was still strangely divided.
Sure.
Because I feel like they were more, not necessarily a posse numbers band, but more likely to get the invite.
Put out a record.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah,
while
yeah, for sure.
We were
for sure.
The metalcore fucking Hellfest band. But like, it's like we're legitimately drinking out of the same well.
Oh, you know, yeah, sure. Listen.
And one thing that I want to, when we were talking about like the early days and whatever, and I wanted you guys to kind of chime in. There are very few bands in my experience over, you know, however many fucking years in hardcore that it were like so like finally honed right out of the box. Like, I feel like they were like a legit band from rip.
I mean, they had some real players.
Not right. Like, yeah, but there wasn't a ton of like growing pains for them while other bands, you know, that had players that were in other bands earlier and stuff like that kind of took them some time to get their shit together. Like, this band from the get go was like, oh, this is like a real fucking band. Like, this,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think they kind of
impressive live.
I think they did something that we're seeing bands now do more and more. And that we started seeing here was they skipped over the growing pains part. They did the learned lessons element, which I think, yo, like, you should take credit. I think Most Precious Blood did that. Right. But I don't think every band does that, where it's like, you got to see this. It was like, okay, so we had Harvest and we had Piecemeal, throw in a blender, and it's not fair to say throw in a blender and here's Hope Conspiracy. But hey, these guys came together and did Hope Conspiracy.
Yeah.
A lot of times in the past, that's happened a million times, where dudes in band A and dudes in band B got together and did band C. Well, band C sometimes still had to do some clumsy shit.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're dead on. I think, one, Hope Conspiracy came out. They had a cool name. Am I wrong? That's a cool name, right?
Great name.
Good name, particularly when they go to just HopeCon. Dope.
So dope for the initial, for the abbreviation. And if they came out, like, I always remember they were a force live right off. They were really good live. And so it's like that element where it's like, yo, we're not going to fuck around. We're going to like be killer live. And it's like, yeah, definitely. I don't know if that was an element of the band's prior. I have a feeling, and I say this out of complete neglect, but based on the age of the dudes, I bet when Harvest first started, and I bet when Piecemeal first started, they were not quite as honed in as they were by the time they were doing Hope Conspiracy.
Oh,
AKA learned lessons. And I'm sure, Tom, you'd say that same thing for Most Precious Blood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If somebody saw MPB in 2000 versus seeing Indecision in 94, you probably got a better product in 2000.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So I think you're dead on. I didn't come to that. I think you're totally right. And I think Cold Blue says that. Do you think, guys, both of you, the fact that the record came out in equal vision made the band feel bigger right out of the gate?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think like it had such a fucking energy because it's like you got Converge and you got AN coming out around that time. The AN record's what, a year later or 2 years later, whatever.
The AN record on Equal Vision, I think, is a year later. The Bridge 9/7 inch is probably coming out in roughly the same time frame as Cold Blue, you know?
Right. And like, it's, yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, at that time, Equal Vision was a fucking, you know, I mean, it still is, but like at that time, especially, it was a thing in hardcore.
Behemoth. And yeah. Tom, what side of the fence does Equal Vision fall on? Oh, none. They were pure neutral. They were what is it? Not chaotic neutral. They were good. What's the good neutral?
Yeah, lawful neutral.
Equal Vision was fucking lawful neutral because the label that was putting out Converge was putting out Floor Punch.
Right.
And the label that did Handside did Bane. And you know what I mean? Like pure down the middle, which even like, yo, if the record comes out on Bridge Nine, that's one way. If the record comes out on Trustkill, that's another way. So this record came out with the a little bit of an easier path, flight plan, other than being perceived as like, oh shit, this is on Bridge, this is on Equal Vision, you know?
Yep.
One thing, go ahead.
I don't necessarily agree with one aspect of that.
Please.
Which is, I think in the same way that they were handsome, could work against them in some rooms.
Oh.
I think being on Equal Vision, which you're right, mostly neutral territory in some respects. But let's say that you're just not inclined to clean guy hardcore, right?
Yo, yes. I think we can even pull it out like more plainly. Equal Vision felt too big for some rooms.
Yes. Okay, so that's going to be tough to explain to a kid who got into hardcore 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's going to be hard to explain to that listener right now that Equal Vision, which maybe some kids only know from putting out Coheed and Cambria records, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe they just, it's kind of off the radar. They're in a different space now.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, Equal Vision really had sort of a Steve Reddy sensibility, which is he likes clean cut ish hardcore that is burly, but not necessarily, it's not good, not stupid, nope, and not goonish.
And there is a level of competency that he's looking for.
Yeah. Today. Yeah.
I mean, they were competent, obviously. They just weren't burly.
That's true. I mean, even Serpico, he put out stuff that was not burly, but I think that the vision in people's minds is the first couple Converge records, right? Or at least the LPs, right? The first couple LPs. And the Bane records, sure. Mm-hmm. And this is all now Converge. At this juncture in their career, they're like fucking Neurosis. They're an institution. Mm-hmm. But at that time, they were kind of just the best band coming out of Boston. Different thing than they are now, right? And I guess it's hard to explain that Equal Vision had a for lack of a better word, Yankees energy.
No, that's perfect. I think that people should be able to understand that.
Not for everybody, though.
No,
right?
No. Some sports fan. Somebody's saying, please stop talking about baseball. yo, they felt like Equal Vision was a hardcore label still at this point, full stop. But they were well run, a well-oiled machine who did good stuff that was in every record store. And you knew what it was, whether you liked it or not, whether you owned a record on Equal Vision or not, you knew what that label was.
Actually, let me drill that down even more.
Please.
There are listeners in our... There's people that listen to us each week that do not believe that there should be any professional aspect to hardcore.
Thank you. We appreciate you listening.
Thank you very much. But that is many fewer people than it was in 1999.
Yes.
And there was big pushback to that sort of, oh, your label has it together. Like
Tom can speak to this from experience. This is, you have a barcode on your record.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was a real thing, you know?
Now, I don't want to sneak this Josh Trustkill, but I wanted to say something kind of sneak diss, which is Tom was on a label that had the appearance of having it together, and that could kind of cost him in some respects, right? Same thing with EVR, who did have it together. It kind of like there's people that just don't like that energy. I guess that's what I'm driving at. We're finding 20 ways to say the same thing, which is most people felt either good or indifferent, but people that did
there
not
were some
like,
people who were like, equal vision, really? Yeah. Your first record, really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of speak about this. Guys, can I tell you something that I found both a little bit surprising and very endearing about HopeCon Cold Blue?
Please.
Guess the length.
23 minutes.
32 minutes.
10 songs, 22 minutes, 8 seconds.
Wow. Nice.
In fact, let me just give them all three right now. The albums, which are Cold Blue, 2000, Endnote, 2002, and Death Knows Your Name, 2006. Noting also that Cold Blue comes out kind of at the end, but the like what you'll see is the CD era allowed. Thankfully, this didn't hit hardcore too much, but the like bloated nature of records. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like alternative and indie records were like 45 to 50 minutes. Thankfully, hardcore didn't do that. But some of the more like big M metalcore and like bigger label hardcore records would be long. Endnote, 26 minutes, 39 seconds. Death Knows Your Name, 35 minutes, 18 seconds. All these records and like that, especially that record, the last two songs in Death Knows Your Name are about 11 minutes in total. This is a band who knew, hey, let's kind of keep our songs under 2.5 minutes.
Smart.
Yeah. Smart. Cold Blue, I wanted to ask you both, is this your favorite Hope Conspiracy record?
No.
Tom.
I thought it was, and it's not.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I'm at.
Tom, I was in the exact same spot. I think we've talked about this because Patrick might. Tom, was Patrick right? Do you remember? Do you know where what his favorite Hope Conspiracy record is?
I don't.
It's Endnote. Is that their best record?
It might be.
I think it might be. All right.
I love Cold Blue.
Yeah.
I actually like all. I really like all the records.
Yeah.
But I think Endnote is just like. Endnote is like the soundtrack to like Falling Down. It's like it sounds like. The dude's literally going to fucking take hostages.
Is there anything we haven't? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm going to get nitty gritty. So if you,
let's hold. Yeah. Is there anything we didn't talk? I think Cold Blue is a very good introduction to this band and sets a place for them, showing that they're taking a sound from the 90s and doing something new with it. Like I said, I think that this record, along with some of the others, kind of deads that. And many people listening are of an age where they understand like, oh, that early 2000 sound kind of what was being done by a lot of the bands on Bridge Nine. I think Hope Conspiracy doesn't get enough credit for that. You know, AN is the band who really gets pointed at, and rightfully so, but Hope Conspiracy probably deserves a little note there too.
They changed the game more than they definitely get credit for.
Yeah, I agree.
Like live, it's like, oh, everyone's got it. Like, they had their sounds fucking locked. It was like the changing of the guard that you're kind of like everyone had to step up a little bit.
How much did you guys go into File 03? And it's only the two songs, but then the demo. I wanted to give note to the song No Love Goes Unpunished because it's one of their best songs, I think.
It might be their best. I feel like that might be like where it all came together.
Yo,
that's like the high water mark, and it kind of brings in both eras of the band.
Yo, I think that this song is doing stuff that AN would do on their second LP. And this is coming out a solid 2.5 years earlier. And that's not to say like, yo, a lot of these players were pulling from the same well. But if you listen to No Love Goes Unpunished, there's parts that are straight up reminiscent, and some of the cadence and some of the guitar work and what they're doing to AN songs like Love American, like some of the other second LP songs in terms of tempo, in terms of adding a little bit of a different drive to the drums that you weren't finding on Cold Blue, that you then do find on Endnote. And yeah, I think this song is very notable, and it's probably the song, Tom, I'm with you. I think you lead off a HopeCon mix with this song.
And I think we will.
That's right. Let's dive in and note, Patrick, get nitty gritty.
Okay. I did not like it as much as I have in the past on this listen, because I enjoyed the vocals on Cold Blue. They're very upfront and with no effects on them. They, by comparison, feel compressed and under the music in EndNote. So as much as I think these songs rip, and I think he sounds technically better by every measure.
Yes.
I did not enjoy his performance as much as I did on Cold Blue, because Cold Blue has a ton of character. And part of the reason it has a ton of character is because his vocals are on top of you. So I still enjoy EndNote a lot. But on this listen, immediately after Cold Blue, I said, I said what I would like is Cold Blue's vocal production, which is vocals out front,
yeah,
largely untouched, but with him in this new, more capable space vocally. I would really have enjoyed that.
I think there's something to be said that this is LP2 vocals. And if you're not familiar with this, go listen to any of your favorite hardcore band, and then a lot of the like adjacent world. Listen to the vocals on LP1, listen to the vocals on LP2. There will be a difference. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's just production notes. Sometimes it's just like, hey, double me up, or hey, I need to tighten this up. Hey, I've been on the road and my voice has gotten better. Sometimes it's the hey, I know I'm in this for the long game now, which is the go from Blood, Sweat, No Tears to Just Look Around vocal, Sick of It All style. I think this is somewhere in between those things, because I think he gets better as a vocalist. And I wonder to myself, Pat, if you are picking up on, I think his vocals on Cold Blue are carried more by personality being out front than quantitatively, let's just being like, he's a better vocalist. He's got more oomph behind him, which is what I felt on EndNote. I think he's just better at projecting his voice. Whereas on Cold Blue, there might be more personality. Neither is a subpar thing. Both are actually really good, but I think it's just kind of pick your poison.
Tom, you did either one of them hit you in a way where you would take one over the other?
I like it. I mean, I get like listening to, like, he does a lot of cool, like, almost Rob Fish type stuff on Cold Blue.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yes.
Well, which is awesome.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, kind of like, it's not just all fucking balls to the wall, fucking screaming. Like,
yes.
He sounds unhinged on both, but EndNote just has this, like, it just feels cold, but not in a bad way. In a scary way. Like a dude at the end of his rope way.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I wonder if when you're hearing that, Patrick's hearing compressed. You know what I mean?
I mean, different.
I could see both. Yeah.
Cold Blue was with Kurt.
Yep.
And EndNote was in Brooklyn at Atomic Studios with Dean Valentonis.
Oh, right. Interesting. And that actually is interesting, because that lines up some production things I've thought about.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, so this is just around the time too that, going when they were recording in Brooklyn, doing like backups and stuff, they were like, yeah, we just finished the LP for that band, No Warning.
Yep.
And I was like, oh shit. They just finished Ill Blood, like right before this. So I want to go back now and listen to Ill Blood and listen to this.
For vocal stuff or just production.
And just everything, like production stuff. See how, like, how, you know.
The record, I think, is the bookend with EndNote. Can you guess what it is?
You mean in their catalog or just in life?
No, in general, by another band.
Oh, no, I cannot.
It's more obvious than you think. I think it's Twilight, the Suicide File LP.
Oh, I can hear that.
Yep.
And I mean,
for many reasons.
Right, correct. So Niraj played guitar, I think, if not primary, one of the primary songwriters in both bands.
Yeah. And can we just give a shout out to him? He is, at the time, people understood that he was sharp. But looking back on it, he was definitely among the most creative dudes to come out of that scene. Like,
oh yeah.
Because it's not just that he can play, because there was a lot of no names, because it sounds disrespectful, but there was like some really capable players coming out of the Boston area, particularly like eventually they gravitated towards metal, but they kind of didn't have much creativity. Mm-hmm. And Naraj is just a clever player.
I mean, he's from Chicago.
That's true. But right. Was he not in Boston during this time?
Yes.
No, he was. Yeah, he moved. Yeah. Like, I feel like all the, like, so
the Midwest invaded Massachusetts.
Yeah, pretty much.
For Hope Conspiracy. So this is an interesting thing. I was a big Suicide Fall fan, but I don't think I heard. I didn't have friends who listened to Hope Conspiracy, and I by this point was like, Hope Conspiracy. And I have to say this: I don't like the cover art of Endnote.
Hold on. Let me look at all of them.
Can you think of it? I love the cover art of Cold Blue.
Absolutely love it. My yes. two. So if you want to talk about being stuck in an era mentally, Cold Blue and Tom, what's the Converge record with
When Forever Comes Crashing? No,
it not the painted one, or I guess they're both painted, but it's got what looks like
Jane Doe.
No. All right. What do you guys call it when a television has the
lines? Yes. Yes.
The lines.
Yes.
I forget what that's called. It's a type of type of interference. But
yes.
There is a Converge record that looks like it's Aaron Dalbeck. I don't know if it is, but it looks like Aaron Dalbeck's face is being distorted by that type of interference, right? And it is very iconic to me. Obviously not so much as Jane Doe is for the entire planet, but for me, it like very much sticks out in my mind. I would recognize it anywhere, anytime, any place. I think petitioning, I think it has a painting around it. And then this is the central, this is the image on it.
Yeah. That would make accurate? Sense actually. Yeah.
So,
we listen to hardcore. I swear.
Like our you brains, think like, what's, like, our brains are just going to gel. This is the thing. Pulling back the curtain. This is the second episode we recorded tonight. There was a time where we would record 5 or 6 episodes in a row, and we're actually gearing up to that. We got to get our. Those. We need some fucking Ritalin or
alpha
something.
Alpha brain.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It is conditioning the empty sky.
It is.
There's like the painting around it, and that's definitely not Dalbeck, but.
Is that not Dalbeck in the back?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Compelling Maybe. Radio. Let's move forward.
So anyway, the point is, everybody, these look like Aaron Turner things. I don't know. Do we know who did the Cold Blue art?
I unfortunately don't, because I really like it. And it's just so – it is very of the time, though, right? Like it feels yes. like that. I love it. So to me, Endnote and the Endnote art is it's going for it, I can see how it lines up if you were going thematically with Cold Blue, but it's not at the same time. And really, it's the colors, because this is, I think there's been lots of bands who are like, let's play with the red fade into like the white of like a light, so you get a little yellow, you get a little orange, and it almost is never endearing to me. It makes me think a lot of the, I guess it's the second Ensign LP and some other stuff that like, it's just a lot of like dark reds and not a lot of interesting stuff for your eyes to catch. So that's my biggest complaint about Endnote, because otherwise I think it's a great record. And I think it is a very logical companion to a record I really, really love, Twilight. And I think there's a lot of people out there who might love The Suicide File, but haven't given this record a proper chance. Let me make case one.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Tom, you nailed it. Endnote was recorded with Dean Baltinosis at Atomic Studios. Guess when? May and June of 2002. Where do you think Twilight was recorded?
Atomic Studios in Brooklyn?
Yes, between July and September of 2002.
Amazing.
There are some things happening. The differences between Endnote and Cold Blue. We discussed the vocals a bit. They get a touch more rhythm in the rhythm section, if you can kind of pick up what I'm putting down, which is to say, I think there's a little bit more rockin' in the riffs, in the same way as Suicide File has a little bit of rockin' in the riffs. Like, hey, we can pull in some elements here without being party punks and help craft our sound a little differently.
Yeah, and I think the, another big difference is the change. Like, so Dan Zimmerman from Harvest was on Cold Blue.
Okay.
So, you know, definitely was probably part of the writing.
Oh, you know. Yeah.
And so the mosh riffs and stuff were probably more him than, say, Naraj. Sure. I could be wrong.
Sure,
but
sure.
If I had a guess. So he's not on Endnote.
Right.
Those chug mosh parts do not exist on Endnote.
That's 100% true.
Or anything thereafter.
That's 100% true.
You know what would actually be – it's actually interesting. Like if we read the list of people in this band.
Yeah, do it. You got it?
Yeah. I have in front of me. The lineup is – the people they've had in this band is fucking ridiculous. So obviously – all right. So Kevin Baker had been in from the start. Mm-hmm. Jonas Feinberg been in from the get-go. Then they had Naraj on guitar – for a bit in the beginning, then came back in 2006.
Yes.
He's like mainly songwriting. He doesn't tour.
Yep.
Current drummer is Jared Shavelson from Painted Black, from fucking – he's in Boy Sets Fire. Yep. He's in – fuck, he's in a new band with the singer from Stick to Your Guns, I think. That's actually quite good.
Okay.
Handsome Jim Carroll.
Yes.
Also a Suicide File member in the band. Our buddy Adam Patterson played drums in the first 3 years of HopeCon.
Yes.
Dan Zimmerman from – so Adam and Dan were both from Harvest.
Yep.
Both were in the original – so, I mean, this is pretty much in the beginning Harvest with Naraj and Kevin Baker.
Right.
Then for a while they had Aaron Lisi, who was in Adamantium, Death by Stereo, a few other bands. He was a Cali dude. He was in it for 2 years. Jared Alexander –
yep.
Played drums at one point for a year.
2002.
Fucking ridiculous drummer. Like to the point that like Suicide File was supposed to do some stuff the other year before the world shut down. Mm. And they were all on board. And then he was like, I have to practice for My Chemical Romance. The dude is that good that he was like, I would play these hardcore shows, but I'm playing the garden.
Yeah, here's a quick thing from him. He's been the drummer for the bands Suicide File, Static Lullaby, Dead Country, and more recently, My Chemical Romance, Alkaline Trio, Matt Skiba, Meg Myers, and Necessary Noise. Oh, that's it. Just right. Some of those little bands.
No okay. Big deal.
Yep.
And then finally, fucking Tim Baum.
Yep, Tim Kosar.
From AN was in there from 2005 to 2008.
That's right.
So that is like a fucking lineup, an all-star lineup of musicians of all-star lineup.
Yeah. I think that you're totally right. I think I would be shocked if Niraj didn't have some hand in the songwriting, but please, if someone wants to correct that for EndNote, I'd love to be corrected. He is listed on this record, in their wiki at least. And I see, I would not say these bands are the same. The Hope Conspiracy and Suicide File are very different, but I see some things here that if you would like a little more abrasiveness than Suicide File, you'd really be able to listen to this. And if you're just a fan of Suicide File and you've never heard this record, I urge you to check it out, because for a long time I overlooked it and was pretty surprised, because yes, I like Cold Blue. I might like EndNote a little more. And I was very surprised by that. So, yeah. And Patrick, up to this point, you've been the only person I've known who's ever talked to me and said, yeah, EndNote, that's the record. I've known people who are either Cold Blue or then All Death Knows Your Name.
Yeah, that to me, that's crazy. Death Knows Your Name came out a big winner for me on this listen. But I think if you're not, I mean, EndNote, listen, I am actually, I agree with you. The art is a step down in most respects. By the way, I cannot figure out what that type of distortion is called on television, because the links that you would go to find out what the distortion is on a tube television are now dead on the internet.
Right.
But it was Jake who did the art for Cold Blue. And EndNote, the art is not as hot. I agree with that part. But I think that this is like just a fucking concentrated burst of really solid top to bottom fucking hardcore. As you point out, with one long song on the entire record, yes, most everything else hovering in the two range.
Yes. Like,
yo, that's an ass kicker, man. This is a fucking good record.
Yeah. Like, and there's no, I even think the longer song, the closer, you know, I guess you could trim a little bit, but like, this is a lean record. Like, there's, especially where I think this is, yo, you know what, Tom, I think this supports your hypothesis. This band came out of the gates ready to rock. I think they avoided a lot of mistakes lots of bands make. They didn't get bloated with their follow-up records. This feels very thoughtful and like, okay, cool. Cold Blue was cool. Musically, we're doing a few new things. Let's just keep it tight.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and that record's punk as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out on EndNote. Then there's a little bit of a break. There's some time here. I'm not, you know, there's a split with Suicide File. We're not going to like get too deep into this. That I think's fine.
Kevin did Bars.
Yep. Yep. Did either of you revisit Bars recently? I haven't. That's actually been something we talked about.
Yeah.
Lord knows how long ago. And I never did it. Did either of you ever go back to Bars?
No.
Okay. Let's put that on our to-do list. Because then in 2006, by far most popular record, Death Knows Your Name comes out. I think, is this their most iconic record cover?
Yes.
Yes.
Most merch sold with this on there.
I mean, there's one song on it that has, like I said, has more plays.
It's a Millie.
Than anything that they've got by a factor of a dozen. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, you can, here's the thing. You can add up the listens streaming on Spotify of Cold Blue. Add up all the songs and you don't hit the streams for Animal Farm.
And I will say that song is hot. That's the closest that they ever came to like bounce, you know, but I'm going to say that Death Knows Your Name, as good as I think this record is, I don't think it has hits. Like, I think that these are good songs, and I think that the one song that everybody listens to is undoubtedly, obviously, a hit. People connect with it, but I think that this suffers, in my view, from being really good throughout. It's almost like, oh, I'm penalizing you because there's just not a massive two song standouts that I can go, holy shit, and flip that back. I just listen to it and go, that's a really good record.
Yeah, I think this is a Very good record. I am actually kind of like it. This is the record where everybody, you know, like if you are just not really paying attention and you're like, oh, is that the record where they're like, you know, that's when they go like rock. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah, right.
And it's not. It's not that even close. It's not fair. Yeah. It's not them. Like, yo, this record has more in common with Dysfear than a lot of people would like to admit. This record has a lot in common with Doom Riders. But it's, they're playing in an, their tempo builds up even more here. I think this is an overall, is this faster? There's a lot more on this record. I said it's a 36 minute record, right? The last two tracks are literally 11 minutes and 25 seconds. So if you kind of cut those two off, which actually I actually really like the second to last track, Sadistic Sacred Whore, because I think it's the weirdest Hope Con gets. And it pulled me in a way where I was like, okay, these guys have an appreciation for some weird shit that SST was doing, but they're not trying to ape that, just trying to siphon that kind of energy with what they do. And I actually thought it was neat. So, but if you were to cut the last two songs, all of a sudden this is a 9-song, 25-minute record.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, that's wild ass. I tend to agree. I think I actually like the first three songs more than I like the fourth song, Animal Farm, which is the hit. And the only other song I was like, oh, maybe that song, Hang Your Cross, like that felt like a banger song. Because I remember people being all up on that. But I overall was like, okay, I get why people like this record. This is their most popular record. I do associate the cover and imagery with the band more than I do the others, but it didn't stick to my bones as much as Endnote did.
That's kind of my feeling.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I don't know if that's what they were going for. I think that's kind of what they were going for.
Right.
Like, Hope, like the Cold Blue, obviously, there's like sing-alongs, there's mosh ports and stuff.
Yes.
They were just like such a different vibe all those, you know, 8 years later or whatever it was.
Right.
Oh, 5 years later, actually, which is kind of crazy. Or 6 years later.
Yeah, right. From Cold Blue to that, for sure. Endnote falls in between.
They were just going for like brutal.
Yeah. And I think they were trying to do more. I think there was still a sensibility to it. It's a lot more driving. Is this an ugly record? Because I don't think it's ugly.
No.
No, I think Endnote's uglier.
Yeah, I think so,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think so, I honestly think this one goes down really smooth. And I think that's part of the problem.
I think it's the smoothest of the three in terms of the record. I also want to ask this. Is this their best record, maybe?
I mean, it's a level of professionalism that's pretty fucking nasty. I mean, they're fucking, they truly rip.
And I guess, let me reframe it. Is your favorite Hope Conspiracy record what you would say is their best record? And that's where I answer. I think Endnote is my favorite of the Hope Conspiracy catalog. With, let me throw an asterisk out there. But Death Knows Your Name is like a clear, like this record caught hold with people in a way that's almost like, it almost eclipses what they did before, which seems crazy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the most cohesive.
Yep. That's like a good way to put it.
There's like an artistic, like, you know, like that's like their most like artful record. The other ones are just like punching through shit. And this is more like, you know, it's not artsy in any way, but like more kind of like, here's one coherent piece of art.
This is definitely has the most album, like fully formed thought stuff going on. And it's not to dismiss that element of the first two LPs, but there's a very clear, like, hey, this is what we're doing something here. And I think it shows. I think it shows with how well this stuck on people. What is the Hope Conspiracy record you would give to someone who hadn't heard them before?
Who am I giving it to? What's the kid's background? Has he ever been a fire watch guy in the woods?
No, this is a hardcore kid. Hardcore kid in 2021. knows a lot, knows everything, knows all the current bands we're talking about, knows most of the classic, like classic 80s, classic, some of the big 90s, some of the big 2000s, but for whatever reason, Hope Con, he just heard, knows the name for sure, but never really gave a record a chance.
Okay, so I think that I think that Cold Blue is different enough from its influences that you could hand it to anybody who likes the influences without making them sour on it. So I think it's safe in that respect.
Okay.
Endnote sounds more pro, but isn't super pro. So I would probably walk the middle course and hand Endnote to people.
Tom, where are you going on this?
I would tend to agree. I would think Endnote is probably like the middle. It's a better overview of like the band in totality.
Yeah.
Because I think if you hand them Endnote and then hand them Death Knows Your Name, it's almost like two different bands.
Right. And if someone was coming in, I think, you know, what's weird is I think if someone was coming in from a more punk side of things, I might hand them Death Knows Your Name. And say, hey, check this out. I'm not sure where you'll fall on this. If they were coming from a moshier side, I think you're safe on both Cold Blue or Endnote. And oh man, it's such a hard one between those two, quite honestly, because I feel like Cold Blue isn't as polished. It isn't as efficient, but some of those weird quirks add to the personality of the record overall.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's part of the reason, like we talked about this. I think Hope Conspiracy as a band, it's just incredible. We said they came out of the gate firing and ready to go, but we just talked about how we saw them progress from each record. You know what I mean? To the point where
they put out nothing that they have to be like, oh fuck.
No, I would certainly hope not. And what I wanted to, I didn't want to leave this out. And I actually did a little research behind the scenes. The True Nihilist single, I was very impressed with. And in reality, if someone was coming from the more punk side or was into like rock and stuff, yo, there's straight up like Motorhead-ish stuff without being like Motorhead cosplay, because that's one of the things I think Hope Conspiracy excels at. Patrick, you said this, if you were giving this to a listener who was a fan of their influences, that wouldn't turn them off by listening to Hope Conspiracy. There's not an element of aping in a way that makes it feel like, yo, what are you doing? And I think they did that here, where they're channeling more of this charging, even faster punk beat, especially on the first two songs. Like, True Nihilist is high level material. And I said, yo, okay, so Death Knows Your Name comes out in 2006. True Nihilist comes out in 2009. Yo, this isn't a band who I thought would be like, yeah, you know, cool, we're good. Which, by the way, Hope Conspiracy is not like broken up. They're not trying to play, you know, your backyard show tomorrow. But I heard rumors that they still occasionally maybe get together and write music.
I mean, they should. A good part of never shitting on your legacy is that people aren't mad or skeptical when you want to play a show.
So I found True Nihilist to be very endearing. Certainly had never really given a shot. And I think this has more of the elements that people tried to use as slander on Death Knows Your Name, but it's so fucking well done that I dare someone to listen to this and be like, ah, these dudes, it's like I said, the song from Philo 3, Tom, what is that?
No good love goes unpunished.
Yes. That's probably the song that I start off. I think the song In the Shadow of God has to be on a Hope Conspiracy mix. Like it's fucking really good.
I think For Love goes on there. People love that one.
Yes.
There's a lot.
No, I mean, it's impressive the catalog that they carry and the fact that they don't get more note. Honestly, I think, I think it's pretty nuts. Shout out to our sponsor Deathwish. I have been given the more formal notification that they are doing a reissue of Death Knows Your Name sometime near the end of the year. So that's kind of exciting. I'm excited to see what they do with that. That should be pretty cool. But yeah, like, I don't know. Is the Hope Conspiracy overrated, underrated, or properly rated?
Slightly under. In 2021, under.
Yeah. Firm under. Tom, firm under? Yes. Yeah.
Firm underrated.
Because they live were a huge... I don't know if they got their flowers live. I don't know if they got their flowers. They certainly had good reactions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, top...
Right.
10, 15 band of the last 20 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'd go that far.
I think... So what segments overlook Hope Conspiracy? Because coming from this, I think if you were into more punk stuff, if you were into faster hardcore, it's pretty easy to have overlooked Hope Conspiracy. For a lot of the reasons we talked about, they were easy to kind of write off. But yo, I knew a lot of people at basement shows who repped Suicide File and didn't HopeCon. And it looking back is like, huh. That was some pretty selective, cognitive dissonance right there, you know?
Yeah, who else? I think it would be easier to point out who's giving them their props.
Yeah. Oh.
I feel like metalcore, like heavier stuff, has missed out.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's got like heavier stuff, I think, has missed out. And I think they would certainly find stuff like, yo... When is the beatdown band going to go, yo, we could take some of this shit off Cold Blue, maybe slow it down and add in that thud part, and we got ourselves a track. Patrick, that's your job for your 518 beatdown band. The name is 518. It's 5 spelled out, the number 1, and then 8 spelled out.
Okay, 8 or 8?
Did 518 ever do 518?
You know, I don't recall that, which is crazy.
Right.
I mean, it writes itself.
It does. I feel like we must have had that in some capacity.
Yeah. Also, something to keep in mind, like we're talking about like this band, like, you know, that they're being overlooked. There's 25,000 people a year. 25,000 people a month are still listening to them on Spotify.
Yes. No, that's true. That's true.
So it's not like there's nothing. That's nothing to fucking sneeze at.
But yo, like, I agree. Am I wrong in thinking that? That
doesn't seem reflective.
It almost feels like it's low. And even though that's a gigantic fucking number,
right? No, listen, that's a fucking great number. And
a band who hasn't played a show since 2014, by the way.
Yeah. I'm going to say that I saw that number and it doesn't fully make sense to me because the listens would seem like they'd have to be higher if 25,000 was maintained over the course of a year, it just, yeah. Whatever. Anyway, not calling Spotify a liar. the point is I think that really speaks to, EVR's reach because look at the Bridge Nine record versus the EVR, I think Endnote and, Death Knows Your Name, like dwarf the other.
Death Knows Your Name came out on Deathwish only.
Oh, is that right? That's right. Man.
So it speaks later, to Deathwish's later record. Yo, yeah, quick note. Without looking, because I referenced this. Suicide File, how many monthly listeners?
I'm going to say less. I'm going to say 15,000.
Tom.
That was going to be my guess, like 15 or 17.
What if I told you that only 2,775 monthly listeners.
No,
it's bullshit.
That's what it is.
Now I am calling Spotify a liar.
I know, there's lying ass liars. But yo, I mean, that's just to give you the concept. Like, Hope Conspiracy had a fucking grip, toured a ton. But if you were sitting in the wrong spot, I'm like, huh, Yeah, Suicide File, probably about the same size as Hope Conspiracy.
I mean, no. You're not going to see them with Converge and like fucking. They toured with Unearth and
Oh yeah,
Dang.
Oh yeah, they did all those big shows. You're totally right because they. Yeah,
you're not going to that.
No. When I'm seeing them play with Striking Distance and Count Me Out, it's a very different show than the Unearth tour. You know, I think Death Knows Your Name propelled them into a very different sphere. Like that record became something that. I mean, I feel like that was a record around that time. Like we talk about how big of an impact Cursed was and like the like fact that Cursed was this like t-shirt band, but also had an impact on sound and more so like vibe and the aesthetics. How many Hope Con shirts have you seen of the cover of Death Knows Your Name? That was a staple.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Insane.
Yeah. So
that was their merch. Like, yeah, they became Hope Con.
Yep.
I can picture the fucking goat head,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do think that's like a fucking fascinating thing. Just as a funny note, in the Death Wish on deathwishinc.com, you click on artists. They have three sections: current, active, and alumni. Alumni are bands who were on the label for better or worse or broken up. Active are bands who were on the label, but perhaps are releasing records elsewhere, right? And then current are bands who either their last record was on Death Wish and they're still active, et cetera, et cetera. The Hope Conspiracy is still listed on current.
Mm.
How about
Love
that?
To hear it.
Love to hear it. Excited to see that reissue. That's really cool. And yeah, I'm looking right now. You can get the Hope Conspiracy Death Knows Your Name t-shirt. That was just fucking everywhere, man. Holy shit. With good reason. Any closing thoughts on this? Cause yo, this, let me start with mine and you, I'd love to hear more from you guys. I fucking talked a lot on this one. I found myself both enjoying Hope Conspiracy more and with a note that I was like, you know what? I should definitely dig deeper on this band and kind of put them more into regular, and it reframed where I thought of them. I will acknowledge that, like, yo, my 19-year-old ass was not fair to these guys for a lot of the weird intangible reasons we talked about.
And I think there's a majority of people listening, you know, that are like, wrote them off because they didn't sound like this, or like they assumed this is a band that I think a lot of people assumed stuff about.
Yeah. They were big M metalcore or they went rock. And it's like, yo, if you listen to Death Knows Your Name once, you go, oh, this is just a good, faster, hardcore record.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, the feedback and stuff we get from folks. Like, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, it either gets people to be like, you know, I revisited it after X amount of time and God, it still fucking stands up. Or I gave fucking Death Knows Your Name a real chance. And I'm curious to see how many folks are like, you know what? I never really listened, but holy fuck. Mm-hmm. Like I've been missing out for all this time. You know, I think, I'll stand by top 10, 15 hardcore bands in the last 20 years.
Mm.
Patrick, how about this exercise for you?
I found it, you know what? Just what I expected, which is, this is a band that is good. I think that the literal worst possible thing that you could manufacture about this band is they're good. If you don't want to say they're great, that's fine. But I think that this is a band that if you were being an honest actor, no bullshit, you would just have to say, yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I walked away with.
This changed your opinion though, because you were Endnote Stan. And what's your favorite Hope Conspiracy record?
That's tough, man. Today I'm a Death Knows Your Name man because I'm feeling it's.
And you've shown and you've stated today a lot of love for Cold Blue. Like true. Today it sounds like you're a Death Knows Your Name 1, Cold Blue 2, Endnote 3. And any fine-eared listeners would tell you you've been Endnote Stan number 1.
Yes.
So it's
you know what? If I can change, you can change.
We all can change.
We all can change.
Cut it.